I've been a pastor for 30 years. Some of you are doing the math. Let me help you with that. I was ordained when I was 12. And no 2 weeks are alike in this work of ministry. It's really true. In some ways, that's what keeps me going and showing, is what will today hold? What will today bring? If there was a common theme, and you said, well, what does a normal day look like, Steve? I'd say, well, what I've just mentioned, there's no 2 days alike, but one common reality in a given day or week or month or year in ministry is the theme of pain and struggle and sorrow. Debbie and I have been married for 26 years. We have a 17, 15, and 13-year-old children, and they all in their own way know a little bit without me saying what kind of day it was. It's that sense that they see that maybe he encountered some kind of sickness or some kind of disease or sin or divorce or death or something that constitutes a drain, a burden, a hurt that I, because of my relationship with people here at Grace Point and beyond, takes me into. I come hoping to be an agent of help and healing, but oftentimes it affects me. You might even go so far as to say in ministry, problems are, to some extent, the profession, if you want to think of it that way. Remember my father-in-law saying to Debbie at our rehearsal dinner for our wedding, you know what kind of work he's going into, don't you? As though to sort of hint at it will be hard at times. And indeed, it has been. Problems are part of what goes with ministry. It's true for you too, though. I'm not describing something that's just unique, feel bad or feel burdened or something for me. It's not that at all. I'm just telling you it's part of my life, and I suspect it's part of yours. I want you to listen to these descriptive words of the world that you and I live in. Bad news, long faces, heavy hearts are everywhere, even in houses of worship. In fact, I was thinking about that, especially in houses of worship here at Grace Point. Why? Because a lot of people come here shot, saying, honestly, I can't go on without you, God. This is not working. Still quoting, much of today's popular music, which many consider a voice for the nation's conscience, promotes misery, sorrow, and despair. It's true, if you listen to certain music, you will find that there's a whole bunch of stories being told. If sex and violence are not the pulsating theme of a new film, some expression of unhappiness is. Newspapers? Well, they thrive on tragedies and calamities, lost jobs, and horrible accidents. Now, that was written by a guy that I know. And I knew him, and Debbie and I knew him well, to be one of great laughter. He was one that cut up whenever he got the chance to do it. He even wrote a book about laughter called Laugh Again. The one I'm referring to is Chuck Swindoll. And it was a book containing the sermons he preached from the letter in the New Testament of Philippians, written by Paul, unbelievably, in prison. And it contains the resounding, constant, throbbing, pulsating theme, joy. You just look at it and say, well, how does he do that? How can he get joy out of jail? That doesn't make sense to me. But he did. In his book, Laugh Again, Chuck tells a very funny story about choosing joy in spite of your circumstances. And he tells this funny story about a woman who he had discovered, had learned to laugh at life. She told, "Humor has done a lot to help me in my spiritual life. How could I have reared 12 children starting at age 32 and not have had a sense of humor?" It's really true. "Recently, I was enjoying some relaxed moments with some new friends, and I told them that I got married at age 31. I didn't worry about being married or getting married. I left my future in God's hands. But I must tell you, every night, I hung a pair of men's pants on my bed and knelt down to pray this prayer: Father in heaven, hear my prayer and grant it if you can. I've hung a pair of trousers here. Please fill them with a man." And indeed he did, giving her the desire of her heart. So here's the connection I want you to consider this morning. Mostly dads I'm talking to this morning, but it probably crosses the lines, and you take from it as you wish. Connection for you. Whether your profession comes with the title pastor or papa, or some place in between, they carry a fair amount of weight and responsibility. Both carry and face a certain measure of problems and complexities. Whether you're a pastor or a father, a papa, both can be pulled off, ready for this, with a sense of humor. Both can be done with lots of laughter. Both are better done with a big, giant dose of joy. But as a dad, you've got some choosing to do. And I want to help you choose this morning by making a linkage for you that's found in Joshua 24. In the last couple of minutes of our morning, find your way to Joshua 24, and you'll be glad you did. It's on page 168. Let me tell you on the way there that a little bit about Joshua. He was a man of great faith. He was one of 12 spies sent into the land by Moses. He was one of only two who came back saying, "You know something? There's some big dudes in that land. There's some very intimidating, sizable enemies that we discovered in that land. But you are bigger and stronger than everything we saw, God." Only two out of 12 said it that way. The other 10 went, "They're too big for us. We shouldn't do this." He, because of his view in God and his faith that God would make good on his promise, he was given the privilege of leading the people into the land. You can find details of that throughout the what's called Pentateuch, first five books of the Old Testament, but you could find a lot of it in Numbers chapter 14. Anyway, fast forward from what I just described to you. Joshua has led the nation, and they've entered the land. They've been there a long time. And this, Joshua 24, is his farewell address. And in chapter 24, Joshua is 110 years old and tired. Understandably. He's got a few things he wants to communicate. And he gives, in doing so, a short history of Israel's experience, their journey that got them to this point. So I want you for a moment, as I read this brief history, I want you to a moment imagine yourself 41 miles north of Jerusalem. The town is Shechem, and all of Israel gathered there. All of the tribes gathered at Shechem, and this is what you would hear were you there that day. Joshua 24, verse 2. "Joshua said to all the people, 'This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Long ago your forefathers, including Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, lived beyond the river and worshipped not the one true God. They worshipped other gods. But I took your father Abraham from the land beyond the river and led him throughout Canaan and gave him many descendants. I gave him Isaac, and to Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau. I assigned the hill country of Seir to Esau, but Jacob and his sons went down to Egypt. Then I sent Moses and Aaron, and I afflicted the Egyptians by what I did there. And I brought you out. When I brought your fathers out of Egypt, you came to the sea, and the Egyptians pursued you on their with their chariots and horsemen as far as the Red Sea. But they cried out to the Lord for help, your forefathers did. They cried out for help, and he put darkness between you and the pursuing Egyptians. He brought the sea over them and covered them. You saw with your own eyes what I did on that miraculous day of deliverance. I wiped them out. Then you lived in the desert for a long time. And I brought you to the land of the Amorites, who lived east of the Jordan. They fought against you, but I gave them into your hands. I destroyed them from before you, and you took possession of their land. When Balak's son of Zippor, the king of Moab, prepared to fight against Israel, he sent for Balaam, son of Beor, to put a curse on you, but I would not listen to Balaam. And so he blessed you again and again, and I delivered you out of his hand. Then you crossed the Jordan and came to your land, Jericho. The citizens of Jericho fought against you, and they were strong, and they were as big as they had been reported. They were the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, the Termites, a whole bunch of people, you know. And I gave them into your hands and sent the hornet ahead of you, which drove them out before you, and also the two Amorite kings. But you did not do it with your own sword or bow. In other words, you've got no gallery of achievement that you can point to that you pulled off. No. I gave you a land on which you did not toil and cities which you did not build, and you live in them and eat from vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant. I did this. Now, that's the history. Fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods of your forefathers that they worshiped beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, read free choice here. If it seems undesirable, then choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the small g gods your forefathers served beyond the river, false gods, or the false gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me, remember Joshua is saying this, as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Here's what you would have noticed had you and I been there. We would have noticed that God had done some pretty amazing things to bring us to this place. He lists them out there. He made a great nation from a promise that he made to Abraham. I will make your name great, and your people will be as abundant as the stars of the sky. He did it. And you would have noticed that in this sort of reflection on the history that God has taken you through. You would have noticed that he took you from slavery. You were in bondage to the Egyptians. And he took you from that to freedom. That's what he talks about in verses 5 to 7 that we just read. And then you and I would have noticed that he gave us victory over our enemies, all the Hittites, the Hittites and Girgashites and so on. You beat them all, not because you're bigger and badder, but because you belong to me. That's how you won. That's how you had victory. And then we would have noticed that he brought us, and we would have looked around when he said, and you're here now. And that breakfast you had, and that lunch you're going to have later today, and the dinner tonight, all of that from food that you didn't plant. Crops that you didn't plant. You live in homes you didn't build. I gave you this land, and you took dominion of it, and I brought you into a land that can be only described, verses 11 to 13 that we just read, as abundant. It is, well, as it was described earlier, a land flowing with milk and honey. Pretty amazing things. In fact, there's probably a lot of chatter at this point in his presentation. Wow, that's true. You know what he's saying? There's no wax here. That's really straight up stuff. He's telling the truth. We would have noticed also, secondly, that God has given us choices to make. that will affect how we live our lives. For example, I don't know if you noticed this as I read it, 21 times in these short verses, the theme of God as Lord comes up. 21 times. It's like this constant, He is Lord, a theme repeated 21 times by this very old man of God. He's Lord, He is Lord. For example, he says, just to give you sort of a refreshment, now fear, verse 14, the Lord, He is Lord. We can choose to accept this fact, or we are free to take the foolish course of our forefathers, exactly as was done in verse 15 that we just read. You can follow, you can acknowledge Him for who He is and bow your knee to Him, letting Him call the shots, or you can take this foolish course that some of your forefathers took and deny that. There's a second theme that we would have known about with regard to choices we must make. And it's the choice of serving. 15 times in this section, the opportunity to serve comes up. We will serve a God is a fact. The question is, which God will you serve? You realize that? It's not a choice of, do I serve God or not? The question is, which God will I serve? If you choose to serve the Lord, then this requires another choice of you. That's to do what verse 23 recommends we do. Drop down and you'll see. Now then, said Joshua, throw away the foreign gods. This is after the people said, okay, we will serve God. He says, okay, then throw away the foreign gods that are among you and yield your hearts to serve to the true, the living God of Israel. Jesus made a similar point when he denounced the most common false god of money. He did so in the Sermon on the Mount. He made this very, very sweeping statement. No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. Then he brings it back to a summary. You cannot serve both. That is, you cannot serve both God and money. So all of that to say this, whatever alternate God you may choose to serve, remember, it isn't compatible with choosing the Lord and serving Him only. Now, how does all this relate to fathers? We're here, fathers. Here's how. Did you notice how many times in this farewell address the mention of fathers is made? He talks repeatedly, there are many responses by the people, but he talks repeatedly to the fathers, to dads. He talks about the forefathers that came before you. And then the classic statement that he makes, he brings to our attention in verses 14 and 15. Fear the Lord and serve Him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your forefathers worshipped beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But in serving the Lord, if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your forefathers served beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. I love this statement, and some of your lips moved when I read it the first time, which tells me you're connected to it as well. As for me and my people. So Joshua, a dad, a father, a head of a home, is giving you an insight into how he chose. Just as dads must decide today, pointing to this principle, we would have understood. God will shape a family through the priorities of a father. He shaped the family of Joshua, and He will shape your family and my family through the choices of a dad. As for me and my household, verse 15, we will serve the Lord. So here's the deal, dads. Your choices carry an enormous influence and impact on your people, on your families. It's really true. and you know it to be true. It's true of very serious and important things. The choices you make influence those that call you dad. How you see God. Is he this distant, detached force? Yeah, there's a God up there, the big man upstairs to you. That will find its way into your kid's view of God. Or is he something that's a foreign entity altogether? Yeah, there's a creator, but I'm not connected. That's serious stuff, and it will shape your people. Or is he your personal friend? Do they see it in you? Do they hear it from you? Do they watch in you a man that's willing to take a stand for God? And you say, how does that happen? Well, it starts with just your Bible open. Starts with a God, I'm gonna dial in on a daily basis, not just Sunday, because that creates a real strange sort of conflict. We're spiritual on Sunday, but we're not the rest. No, that doesn't work. You know that. So it's important about questions like, who's your Lord? Throwing back to Jesus' words, is it the true God? Or is it money? Or is it you? Because that will have a real important impact on our people. Choose this day whom you will serve. That's true of serious things. It's also true of not so serious things, the comedy of life. It's no less true in humor and laughter and joy levels that you, Dad, set for your family. We really do. So let me ask you a couple questions as we kind of wrap things up this morning. Is your home a happy place? I'm asking these questions of every parent here. But let me draw them closer to the dads, because as you decide, so goes your family quite often. So is your home a happy place? The answer you give has to do with you, Dad. Which leads to another question. What will your kids remember about you? They're going to remember you. That's a fact. The question is, what will they remember about you? And that can be shaped and influenced by choices you make. We can be remembered as dads for our lectures, where we sit down and walk them through it, tell our kids how it is, where it is, what's going to go on, what's not going to happen, and we give a good, solid, airtight presentation called a lecture. We can also, and they have a place, but we can also be remembered for our laughter. There's a man I've heard speak a number of times and read lots of his stuff. Some of you have watched him and been impressed by him. Josh McDowell. He made a deliberate decision to be a dad that his kids would remember as Captain Fun. He did so because he came from a really lousy home. Lots of abuse. Terrible, verbal, unfun place to be. And he's tried lots of his life to break free from that. So he set a course to do things differently in the family that he was raising with his wife. Josh said this, "One of my goals as a dad was for our kids to grow up and say it was a blast to be a McDowell." Isn't that great? So, Dad, are you leaving a legacy of laughter? That's the question I want to ask you this morning. Are you the kind of dad that's creating a history for your family of humor that they go, wow, it was a blast to be a McCracken, or fill in your name. It was a blast. It was a kick. It was crazy at times. It was nutty. It was fun. You see, choosing to laugh, dads, let's not forget this reality check. Choosing to laugh, especially in hard times, is leading our families and leading them well in a way that will be remembered and repeated. It's especially good to laugh about yourself, isn't it? Preachers have a lot of jokes that are used, and I love this little piece that helped me do just that this week. After a church service, a little boy told the pastor at the door, "When I grow up, I'm going to give you some money." "Well, thank you," replied the pastor, "but why?" "Because my daddy says you're one of the poorest preachers we've ever had." Great kid. Here's my parting shot. Dads, let's do what we can to develop a laughter lifestyle. Laughter lifestyle. Dad, you and I have a choice to be fun to live with. You do. Unpredictable, crazy. And I want to challenge you this morning based on the choice that Joshua made to choose a sense of humor. It's not too late to do so. Be a granddad and get cutty and nutty and weird. It's okay. It's time to choose. Remember, your choice will affect those who call you dad. It will. There's a wonderful proverb I want to leave you with. 17:22. A joyful heart is good medicine. Dad, that makes you the medicine man. Don't ever run out of that medicine. I'd like you to bow your heads if you would. God, thank you for being our Father. You've given us lots of things that entertain us and amuse us, and there's so much seriousness in this world. We don't have to search for that at all. But we've got choices as dads to whether we will let that shape us as serious, super serious, sober, kind of intense, wrinkled brow guys, or whether we're going to have a good time and show our kids, because the choice we make will be a choice that impacts them. And all of this, it would just be silliness. It would be a message if it weren't from you. The God that said a joyful heart's good medicine. The God who presents joy as a choice. May we choose it as you reign in us for your glory. Bless the brothers in this gathering today, especially who call themselves dad. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen. Let's stand together. Lord, reign in me is this last song as ushers come. We've got a very special gift to give all dads at the door this morning, so don't run out until we're done singing, and we're going to head next door and have some man coffee. All right? Let's sing together.